Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Sergeant is instructed to bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend John Ward from Prairie Community Church in Eden Prairie. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Almighty and eternal God, draw our hearts to you, guide our minds, fill our imaginations, control our wills, and then use us as you will, always to your glory and for the welfare of your people. Lord, for each person here this morning, bring your encouragement in a special way. And as this corporate prayer comes to a close, let it not be the only prayer you hear from these chambers today. At that time when it is most needed, remind these good people that each can say in his or her own heart, Lord, all I have to do today is be faithful to you with what I'm facing. I don't always need to be understood. I just need to be faithful. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reiner, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Wieger, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the second order of business, executive and official communications. Please make note of those. The third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of 5 members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate file. Senate file number 174, a bill for an act relating to financing and operation of state government, providing deficiency funding. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Knobloch, Peterson, McNamara, Carlson, and Johnson C. Senate file number 174 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House file number 8, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The bill printed on the agenda will be given its first reading and referred as indicated. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move the appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. Introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated with an addition to Senate File 1217 to be read by the Secretary.
Senators Dietzick, Reinert, Eaton, and Tomasoni introduced Senate File Number 1217, a bill for an act relating to taxation.
Senate File 1217 will be referred to the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development, and the rest of the referrals are printed on the calendar and first reading. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are author motions that will be adopted as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I move that Senate file number 106 be withdrawn from the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
This is your bill?
Yes, it is.
And you've spoken to both chairs?
Yes, madam.
Including yourself.
Chair. Exactly. Thank you.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Herr.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 966 be withdrawn from Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing, and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
This is your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is my bill.
You've spoken to both committee chairs?
They're informed, and I think they know about it now.
All right.
Thank you.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate Resolutions number 80 and 81 will be referred to the Committee on Rules. Secretary Zoff will read Senate Concurrent Resolution number 5.
Senators Bach and Han introduce Senate Concurrent Resolution number 5, a Senate Concurrent Resolution relating to adjournment for more than 3 days.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, members, what you see on your desk is Senate Concurrent Resolution number 5. Just want to remind everybody that even though it says we're going to adjourn after session on Thursday, March 26, want to remind you if you're making some travel plans to go somewhere, this resolution is related to sessions, not committee work. And we do plan the next day, Friday the 27th, a full day. That is the second committee deadline. So just don't make plans based on what you're about to vote on, because the 27th of March is the second committee deadline. We'll have committees all day that day. Madam President, I move Senate Concurrent Resolution number 5.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I'm about to call for a recess so that the two caucuses can spend some time going through the contents of the conference committee report we're about to take up. So the majority will caucus in room 107. And Senator Han, I expect maybe about 20 minutes. We don't want to take too long so that we disrupt committee work today.
Senator Han.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, we'd caucus in room 112.
And Madam President, just if people could stay in their desks after a recess, I want to call on Senator Dams for a moment. So, Madam President, I move a recess of the Senate to the call of the chair.
On the motion to recess, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate stands in recess. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Bach. As many of you have noticed, today we've got several young students here and their advisors in their blue jackets coming to some of the committees, meeting with some of the legislators, and we have several of those folks up in the balcony here today, and I would just like to take a minute to recognize them and thank them for what they do and thank the instructors for what they do. It's great to see that these young folks take time out of their day to come to the Capitol and to communicate and visit with us as legislators, and we can learn a lot from them. So, again, just a shout out and a thank you for these young folks for being here.
Room 107, majority.
Right.
Immediately. Madam President, I move further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Remaining under motions and resolutions, the next item on the agenda is the Conference Committee Report on Senate File 174. Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee Report on Senate File 174 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Is there any discussion on that motion? All those in favor of the motion to adopt the Conference Committee Report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All those in favor of adopting the conference, motion prevails. Division. All right. All those in favor of adopting the Conference Committee Report, please stand. You may be seated. All those opposed? Well, we have 36 votes. The motion prevails. Senator Cohen.
Madam President, first of all, I'd move a call of the Senate for all the further proceedings on Senate Files 174.
Senate is under call.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings on the call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absentees.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Cohen.
Okay, Madam President, members, this is the famous or infamous deficiency bill. Let me just make a couple of comments about it. The deficiency portion of this bill is, with one exception, exactly the same as it passed the Senate floor. So it has the deficiencies for the Department of Human Services, the deficiencies for the Department of Health, the deficiencies for the Zoological Garden. The request for deficiencies as a consequence of the Ebola crisis for the several hospitals that provided those services under an emergency basis, and the deficiency for the Department of Natural Resources. The addition to the deficiency relative to that, and members, obviously, this is no surprise, obviously, you've been reading the stories and hearing about this for the last week or so, that the House had taken a small additional appropriation from the affected agencies, which are reflected in the spreadsheet, from DHS, Health, and DNR, to reflect their concern relative to some of the proposed pay increases. The governor had agreed to that reduction. You'll note on the spreadsheet that to Human Services that was a $6,000 reduction, to Health $16,000, and to Natural Resources $18,000. And those were reductions that were not contained within the Senate bill. The other issue, of course, members, is the question of executive pay compensation. Executive compensation for the governors, commissioners, and other high-level administrators. And members might recall that the Senate took a position that I think was supported close to unanimously, I believe, to delay those increases until the beginning of the biennium. The House had a different approach, which was to provide a one-day window for the governor to make those increases, that window taking place on July 1st of this year at the start of the biennium, and at that point to revert back to the previous law where the LCC would make recommendations, which then had to be adopted by the entirety of the legislature. And as members know, there was a lot of discussion and back and forth. The governor at some point made it clear that he had no objection to the House proposal as presented by the Speaker of the House to the governor. So I think insofar as the Senate conferees were concerned, we certainly have adopted the House language, but did so at the urging and concurrence of the governor. And on that basis, it became difficult, I believe, to argue for Senate language, which we thought was better language. We had some interesting discussions, both philosophical and otherwise, relative to the issues of pay and how it's handled by this body. Senator Sharon offered an amendment that would have allowed for COLA increases, begin with the next governor, based upon bargaining unit negotiations. So to not get into this every 10 to 12 year crisis, that amendment was offered and spoken to quite well by Senator Sharon, but the House conferees unanimously opposed the amendment. And again, the governor had made this agreement, and that is what we have in the bill. The last comment I'd make is that there was language, clarifying language requested by the Department of Management and Budget, and that language was accepted. That was not substantive language. What it did provide, it makes clear, is the governor affirmatively on July 1st will have to make these executive increases. This is not something that will happen automatically. He'll have to take some executive action to then make whatever executive compensation increases he so chooses to make, if any, on that date. That's, in essence, the conference committee report, and would be happy to answer any questions members might have.
President.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, would Senator Cohen yield?
Senator Cohen will yield. Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, Senator Cohen, my understanding, and maybe you mentioned it, but I guess I didn't hear it if you did, that the language that was accepted is almost exactly the language of the Housley Amendment that was offered on the floor.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Fischbach, the answer to that is yes, word for word, with the exception of the clarifying amendment requested by MMB. And in fact, that language was incorporated by Representative Knobloch into his amendment to adopt the House language.
Madam President.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, I'm a little surprised that Senator Cohen would have accepted that language. It was defeated, obviously, early on the Senate floor, 30 to 35, and Senator Cohen had some very, very strong words to say about the Housley Amendment at the time, to the effect of that we have never done this before on a deficiency bill. We have never, ever been done this before, and goes on, talks about mucking things up. And so I'm very concerned that he would just set aside the Senate position on that and his strong words regarding the Housley Amendment and just accept this language. Although I truly do appreciate the spirit of the language, I'm just really surprised that he would accept this.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Fischbach, I'm very, very sorry to disappoint you.
Is there any other discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And would Senator Cohen yield for a question?
Senator Cohen, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Cohen, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to sit on the conference committee with you chairing and Representative Knobloch, and we had some good, strong discussion with regards to the whole part of the bill, the deficiency portion, which I think, you know, there were a lot of pretty much an agreement there that everybody had with regards to the need that is there, and I think it was pretty well. The case was built and it was there for that portion, but as you know, the biggest part of the discussion ended up with the additional portion of that bill, which is seemed to be taking over the discussion, not only here but in the media, and that is the discussion about pay raises. And Senator Cohen, the question I have is, can you tell the body how many commissioners are involved in this increase, what the averages are? And maybe that's not a fair question. I guess I can finish that portion for you. It's anywhere between, I think, being on the lowest portion of the increase was 8%. On the high was 148% increase. That was an individual standalone, but upwards of 20 to 30% increases. Can you tell me how many commissioners are included in this and the chairman of the Met Council has now been given been appointed by the governor to a full-time position. Could you take us through the process? We had some discussion there. I think the body would be interested in hearing how that happened.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think the answer, and don't hold me to the exact number, but I believe it's 22 commissioners and then several other offices that are not at a commissioner level. I believe that would be mediation services, gambling control, IRRB, Met Council, mental health, public utilities, paramutual racing, I think are the several other positions that are not considered commissioner positions, those five or six plus the 22.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Cohen. Could you give us a little background? I know you can certainly give us the history background on a lot of issues here, and you have over the years. But could you give us a little background on the study commission and how that came about real quickly, if that can happen, and just how they came about with the definition of a level one and a level two pay study grid here. And we all know, Senator, how this came about, the authority came about was the DFL allowing this to happen 2 years ago when they were in control of all three bodies. And that certainly took up a lot of discussion in our committee meeting. But could you give us a little background on the pay study as to how we came to the determination of these numbers?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not going to speak to the particular numbers because that's something that has been determined by the governor. But as you know, the Compensation Council of 2 years ago and Senate members were myself, Senator Ress, Senator Miller, there was extensive discussion over several evenings of meetings about how to handle the pay issue generally, not just simply executive compensation, but also judicial pay and legislative pay. And a lot of discussion about the back and forth, the political volatility. We just discussed some of that yesterday afternoon and into the evening, as you well know. And what came out of that was the ability for the governor to set executive salaries based upon a certain pay range. And then coupled with that, the Hay Commission study, which was just released within the last couple of days, showing not only where Minnesota is and where Minnesota's been, but also offered context for other states around the country where you have commissioners in adjacent states. Let's put aside California or New York. You know, let's talk about the commissioner salaries in North Dakota, which are far beyond the commissioner's salaries in Minnesota. Part of that commission report also talks about the significant disparity between state executive pay and local executive pay. And I'd be the first to admit that I think if you compare metropolitan salaries to salaries in greater Minnesota, that you'd find some differences. But I think it's quite striking when we look at my city, my county, my school district, much less any number of suburban cities, suburban counties, and school districts, where the pay level of those chief executives is far beyond the state, where you have people who are city managers of cities of 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people making salaries far beyond the Commissioner of Management and Budget, responsible for a budget in totality of $77 billion. And so I think the executive pay study, both done by the Hay Commission as well as done by the Compensation Council of 2 years ago, makes those disparities, sets out those disparities in a very striking way. Should also mention that the Compensation Council 2 years ago was, if I recall correctly, was co-chaired by Mr. Tom Fraser, who has since been appointed to a position on the 2nd District bench, I'm sorry, the 4th District bench in Hennepin County, and Mr. Bob Schroeder, who was the Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Plenty. And I recall conversations on that Compensation Council where Mr. Schroeder talked about some of the difficulty Governor Plenty's administration had in the retention or the hiring of people at for executive positions. And the discussion, I want to make sure members understand, the discussion wasn't to compare, I mentioned, say, the commissioner of MMB. It wasn't to compare a position like that with the CFO of General Mills or 3M or Cargill. It was a comparison to city managers with a population of 50,000 people, or a school district far smaller than what, say, the Commissioner of Education deals with almost a million students in the public schools in the state of Minnesota. So it was those disparities that led to the Compensation Council discussion of 2 years ago, with recommendations passed, as I recall, almost unanimously, coupled with what the governor felt he had to do relative to his commissioners that are currently serving.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you for that answer. Now, part of that, I do recall the discussion about the executive's pay throughout the private sector and how much, you know, how different they are from the commissioners. But I think everybody in this room understands that a commissioner's job is probably not a career job, whereas a city administrator, city coordinator, county coordinator probably is, probably something that they went to college for and aspired to be in their life. A commissioner position, generally speaking, I think, and everybody can agree, that it is kind of a springboard, if you will, to a position like that. Kind of the expectations, I think, of somebody that gets appointed to a commissionership. But again, you were talking with regards to career folks, and I understand all that, but understand that commissioners are not, and I don't think are considered career folks. The discussion that went on, and it was very lengthy, with regards to how the commissioners' increases are going to be brought forward. And in your opening remarks, you mentioned Governor Dayton now having the executive authority one day period. And I think everybody in this body understands that he has one day to make up his mind as to what those raises can be. I'm not totally clear on the bill, but does not governor have the option on that one day to actually put it in writing or put it in law that, yes, indeed, we're going to get to this percentage for the increases, but we're going to take a 3-year period to do that. We're actually going to go 7%, 7%, and maybe 10% instead of a 30%. All in one fell swoop. Does he have that authority under this bill to do that?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, he can make that determination as to how he wants to handle the raises or not handle the raises. That'll be within his determination. That was what was contained in the language worked out between the governor and the Speaker of the House.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, and Madam President, and Senator Cohen. Maybe this is more of a comment, and it's a comment that I made, I think, very pointed at the committee meeting last night, and the conference committee was that if anybody, and there were 10 of us, anybody, including everybody that was in the room, believes for one second that the governor is not going to, in that one-day period, give him the raises that have been talked about already, I think we're all sadly mistaken. And the reason I say that is because, quite frankly, Governor Dayton is blatantly honest. He's blatantly honest in his comments to the media, saying, I really don't care what you think, folks. I'm not up for re-election. I'm going to do this. So there's no question in my mind, and I don't think there should be question in anybody's mind, of what's going on here when it comes to that one-day window. I just wanted to make that comment.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Madam President. You're right, Senator Ingebrigtsen. There is no question what's going to happen on July 1st. There is no doubt in my mind. Let's all take a history lesson and go back in time just a little bit. In 2013, we had a bill that gave him the authority. The minority members didn't vote for it. We didn't give him the authority. People in the back of the room gave him the authority. Recently, one of our media friends, Rachel Stessenberger, has an article here, and I'm just going to read just a quick part of it. She starts out with, "The salary swirl is almost over." Over? You must be joking. I start to think of that scene in Animal House where John Belushi is saying, "Over? You think it's over? It's not over." Because on July 1st, the governor of the state of Minnesota is going to put the pay increases back in place. Let's look at what those pay increases are. Metropolitan Council chair goes from $58,000 to $144,000. You folks at home, did you ever see an $86,000 pay increase? Now, granted, he's going from a part-time to a full-time position. Have you ever seen an $86,000 pay raise in your paycheck? I just went through my own review, and I sure as heck didn't see that. You've got other commissioners, $35,000. These are full-timers. $35,475, $25,000, $30,000. The average pay increase is 27%. 27%. Sorry, not a prop, but 27%. How many of you at home have seen a 27% increase in your pay overnight? I believe the commissioners do a good job. That doesn't mean we need to gouge the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. Going back, one more brief comment. Going back to the article from Rachel Stassenberger, she asked the question, what will happen to the full-time Met Council chair salary? It says here, Dwinnick's salary will return to the part-time level of $58,489. Pretty good part-time job, if you ask me. He told the Pioneer Press that he, this is soon to be chair or chair designate Dwinnick, he said that he's not sure, given family daycare needs, whether he can continue to show up at the office every day with a lesser pay. Or he's going to have to work from home one day because of daycare needs. Let's not forget one additional component. Mr. Dwinnick is married to Governor Dayton's chief of staff, who makes upwards of $120,000. Let's put those together quickly. Right now, before his $86,000 raise, their family brings home approximately $160,000 to $180,000 take-home pay. And we just can't make it on that pay? Folks at home, if you're listening to this, you should be aghast at what is about to happen here. Absolutely aghast at the gouging that is going to go on to your paycheck. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President and Senator Osmak, a couple of things. First of all, I always appreciate somebody else who can quote movies on the Senate floor. Thank you, and I'll look forward to continuing that at some later date. Let me offer a couple of comments. First, Senator Osmak, you and I have discussed some issues and some concerns you have relative to the Met Council. And I don't think it's a secret on this floor that the Metropolitan Council is an agency of at times, some controversy. That's not the issue with the bill today. First of all, whether or not Mr. Dunnick, the new designee by Governor Dayton, is an appropriate choice or not, we get the opportunity to deal with that on the confirmation calendar. That's the place for that discussion. This discussion is relative to what is an appropriate salary. The previous chair, Sue Haig, happens to be a constituent of mine, and somebody, to be fair, I'm friendly with. She made the attempt to continue her position as Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity, along with working as a part-time chair of the Met Council. And she's a person of immense talent. In fact, she started her professional career as an attorney for the Met Council, was a Ramsey County Commissioner for a number of years. She just found the combination absolutely untenable and that she could not make that combination work, given the fact that the Met Council is, what, $1 billion, several thousand employees. So we could have a discussion about the Met Council and the Met Council positions, the Met Council responsibilities. But if we're going to have a Metropolitan Council, I would certainly defend making a part-time position into a full-time position. That's a totally separate issue from the qualifications of the present designee to be chair of the Met Council. That's an issue for the appropriate Senate committee and for the confirmation calendar on the Senate floor. And I think it's, in all honesty, Senator Osmak, a little bit of a red herring relative to the conference committee report. That's a subject better left to a different day. But I do think your comments relative to, I think, gouging the taxpayers, I believe that was the comment, relative to these increase in salaries, these horrific increase in salaries as that you've suggested, that we are taking the commissioner of management and budget and going to a salary of $155,000 for somebody who has the responsibility of a budget from all sources, whether general fund, federal, or otherwise, of $77 billion. By contrast, Senator Osmak, if we want to talk about, and I'm not here to suggest that we ought to turn our attention to local governments, but I'm forced, Senator Osmak, to suggest, I believe in your district, the city of Mound, with a population based upon the most recent census of 9,052 people, pays their city manager $115,000. Now, to suggest, and I have no idea who the city manager is, and could be a person, he or she could be a person of high competence, but to suggest that the city of Mound, with 9,000 people, should pay their city manager, and I don't care if it's a lifetime position or not, a salary comparable to the commissioner of management and budget for the state of Minnesota with a $77 billion budget within his jurisdiction is gouging the taxpayers, that just stretches the imagination. And I can go through a host of cities. I'm looking at Senator Osmak at some of the other cities in your district. And by the way, we could do the same with my city, with the city of St. Paul, a much larger city.
Point of order.
Where we'll look at.
For what purpose does the gentleman rise, Senator Nino?
Madam President, will you please ensure that members are directing their comments through the president and not directly to each other?
So noted. Please direct your comments to the president. Thank you.
Madam President, I think I started doing that and then referenced Senator, it's like it was kind of going on, so I apologize. But yes, Madam President, Senator Osmak, you know, we can do this with local salaries, and not just the local salaries of your district. We can do it with individuals within the city of St. Paul. State government has lost significant folks of high competence and high quality. And again, I'm not talking about, you know, moving over to Cargill or General Mills. And this legislature has lost staff members of extreme competence who've gone to local governments because of the salary scales. So if we want to talk about gouging taxpayers with some of these positions, you know, I think we should then do it apples to apples and make sure we discuss what happens at a local level where our state executive individuals simply are put in a position of significant disadvantage. And as a consequence, the taxpayers of Minnesota are put in a position of significant disadvantage because we are unable to retain and attract those who would make a difference for us. And I'll be honest, Madam President, I haven't heard that simply from Governor Dayton. I've heard it from every governor that I've served with during the years I've been here, every single governor, and that's of every single party.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, members, I'd like to focus not on the red herrings. This particular bill is not about what are adequate pay rates for commissioners. That's a topic for another day. What is really at the heart of this bill is the unilateral authority that was given to the governor by this body, by this legislature. In 2013, every Democrat in this chamber voted for Senate File 1589, which specifically removed the legislative authority for granting these pay raises and stuck it square in the governor's lap. That's the real issue at the heart of this conference committee report that we are discussing today. And the family feud between Majority Leader Bach and Governor Dayton, that's a red herring too. We spent 2 weeks talking about that. But again, that's not the issue. The issue is the unilateral authority that this legislature gave to the governor to do what he did. For the governor to enact these pay raises, double-digit pay raises, to people who are making some of our best-paid public servants in this state, some would say these are political appointees and that they are commissioners, and for the governor to unilaterally do that, and we find out about it months later, it comes to our attention. You know, that is Exhibit A. That's the issue, members. The governor's unilateral authority to do what he did, granting those pay raises, is Exhibit A, why Senate File 1589 was a bad piece of legislation. It gave the governor that authority. And now we're back trying to reel back that authority that this chamber and this legislature gave to the governor. Just last week, we offered an amendment that would repeal the governor's authority for these unilateral pay raises. And yet, it was voted down in this body by every Democrat, I believe. Certainly enough to kill that needed repeal of that unilateral authority. We also supported suspending those pay raises, which is kind of a half measure, when in reality, the authority that this chamber gave to the governor should be repealed. And I'm disappointed that the conference committee report that came back to us today gives the governor that 24-hour window to exercise that unilateral authority, which he should not have. We had the opportunity to take that away. We did not. And now there seems to be no holds barred. That is open to the governor to increase those pay salaries as he chooses fit. I think it is a bad compromise. One would not even call it a compromise. What we really need to do in this body is repeal the authority that was given to the governor to make these pay raises.
Senator Newman.
Madam President, I just wanted to let folks know, just speaking for myself, what I saw in terms of this bill when it was in finance and when it left the floor last. And I will tell you, I voted against the bill leaving the Finance Committee, and I voted against the bill when it left the floor the first time. And I did so because this is the way I'm looking at this supplemental budget bill, or this deficiency budget, is we've got a bunch of state agencies who spent, round numbers, $15 million more than we had authorized them to spend. And with the exception of the Ebola emergency, I did not see any emergency in this supplemental budget bill. And the result of the state agencies spending more money than they were authorized to spend, the repercussions were that the governor gave the commissioners significant, and I mean significant, pay raises. Now, here is what I didn't know in the Finance Committee, and what I didn't know the last time this bill was on the floor. And I think it is appropriate to talk about this red herring at this time, because as so often is the case, Newman is the last one to arrive at these political parties. I didn't know about this Adam Dwinick when this bill was on the floor the last time. I had never heard of him. I was aware of the fact that the Met Council had gone from a part-time position to a full-time position. I was aware of the fact that we were talking about an $85,000 pay raise. I was aware of the fact that now we're going to have a Met Council chair that's going to make, I don't know, $145,000 a year. I knew about that. I had never heard of Mr. Dwinick. And I would invite, if I am incorrect in my information, I would invite a correction. But this is what I have learned since I voted on this bill the last time. that in 2011, Mr. Dwinnick was appointed to the Metropolitan Council. In 2012, according to the Campaign Finance Disclosure Board, Mr. Dwinnick was working with an organization called Win Minnesota, which was a fundraiser for the Alliance for a Better Minnesota. And the Alliance for a Better Minnesota spent $3 million on behalf of Governor Dayton to help him get elected. And I'm told it spent approximately $2 million against Jeff Johnson in the immediate past governor's race. In January of 2015, Mr. Dwinnick was appointed as the chairman of the Metropolitan Council. And the last thing that I didn't know is that Mr. Dwinnick is married to Governor Dayton's chief of staff. Now, folks, just this is not a red herring. This is the very, very definition of political cronyism. Mr. Dwinnick is the benefactor of Governor Dayton paying back his debts. That's political cronyism. Connect the dots and tell me that I am wrong, that Mr. Dwinnick got this job and got this enormous pay raise on merit alone. And it has nothing to do whatsoever with the fact that he helped Governor Dayton get elected, and Mr. Dwinnick's wife is Governor Dayton's chief of staff. If I'm wrong on that, please point it out to me. I think it's fair to say that in American politics, sometimes parties gain power, sometimes politicians overreach. And when they do, I think that the voters have a real good habit of putting them back in their place. And I am reminded of 1978, when there was some shenanigans that went on in the state of Minnesota that removed a particular party from power and wiped the slate clean. And I think that the voters in the state of Minnesota are paying attention to what we are doing here. And this bill, this particular bill, represents everything that they hate about us in St. Paul, this political cronyism. And this bill, I predict, will be the lit piece in 2016. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Cohen, then Senator Lance.
Madam President, and members, first of all, Madam President, Senator Nelson, I made a mistake. I inferred from your comments that you were speaking in support of the bill because you talked about taking away the governor's unilateral authority to make salary increases. This is exactly the agreement that Speaker Dowd and Governor Dayton reached, was to allow this on a one-time basis, but then to permanently remove that authority and revert back to previous law. So as your comments began, I thought, Senator Nelson, that you thought this was really a great idea, realized as you continued that you didn't think it was such a great idea. Madam President, Senator Newman, I mentioned previously, this Senate will have an opportunity to discuss Mr. Dwinnick and his particular qualifications. We'll have an opportunity to talk about his appointment by the governor, but I would strongly suggest this is the wrong time and the wrong place, because what this is all about is what is appropriate pay for executive positions, and substitute that individual for any name, John Smith or Terry Brown or whoever. I think the decision of the governor to make this a full-time position, as I indicated, is a very appropriate one. But Madam President, Senator Newman, I'm also glad that you rose to talk about your concern in the Finance Committee with what really is at the substance of the bill. Because And we disagreed, obviously, in the Finance Committee. I authored the bill and support the bill. I can tell members of this body that I worked closely, I hope he won't disagree, in suggesting that Representative Knoblach and I, as the counterpart chair, the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, and I had a number of conversations, both individually and jointly with members of the administration, relative to the deficiency bill. And I think one of the things that's striking is that the bill that was passed out of both bodies, separate from that 40,000, which we have adopted in the Conference Committee report, and putting aside the salary issue, that the deficiencies passed out of both bodies were to a dollar the same. There wasn't a difference. And I had said earlier in presentation of the bill off the Senate floor that over the years where I've authored deficiency bills, and I've done so with two or three different administrations, we've tried to carefully look at whether it was an appropriate deficiency. And it's not my intent to get into a lengthy conversation about what's going on with the Department of Human Services, the conditional permits that they are trying to deal with, the federal court orders under which they have to operate, the problems that the Zoological Gardens had with an incredibly difficult winter that was not anticipated, an Ebola crisis that had this country in an absolute state of panic. I think Commissioner Ellinger has made a very interesting point that really hasn't been reported. It's been reported but not emphasized, that Minnesota has the largest West African population in the country. So to the extent that there might be difficulty with the Ebola crisis in West Africa, it very well could have been visited in the state of Minnesota, but for some immediate emergency action by the commissioner and his department, helped by several of the emergency hospitals. That's what a deficiency bill is all about. And I would hope members in looking at this bill will remember that there were some significant emergencies that these agencies had to deal with that were attempting to, in turn, address in this bill. And just to make sure that you understand, this is not something done in lockstep by one political party or the other. I would like to remind members and salute them for it, that in the Finance Committee, I had some concerns about the deficiency for the DNR. It was Senator Ingebrigtsen, who is as knowledgeable about the DNR as any member on the floor, who made the case in the Finance Committee as to why that portion of the deficiency should have been reinstated. And I think he carried the day. I think I can't say he carried the day with the House as well, but you know, when I talked to Representative Knoblach, I think some of those arguments that Senator Ingebrigtsen made relative to the DNR were quite convincing, at least in the Senate Finance Committee, as to why that should have been reinstated, which it was. So I think members ought to keep in mind, this is a deficiency bill, and dollar for dollar, there is no difference between the Democratic Senate bill and the House Republican bill in terms of these deficiencies.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, members, I just wanted to respond quickly to some of the statements and assertions made about the Met Council chair position. Senator Osmick earlier had read from an article in the Pioneer Press, and thank you, did actually talk about how this isn't a raise per se, but it's a change in the nature of the job from part-time to full-time. And members, that's exactly the point. The job is changing from part-time to full-time for reasons that a lot of us agree are good reasons that Senator Cohen has already articulated. The simple fact of the matter is that the Met Council has 4,200 employees. It serves a metropolitan area of almost 3 million people, which is 51% of our state total. It has a budget, a $6.5 billion capital budget. It has a $950 million operating budget. It is an extremely large and important agency with a lot of authority and delivers a lot of key responsibilities and services around transit and sewer and land use and the like. And a lot of folks have expressed some frustration with the Met Council over the years in terms of the level of accountability, responsiveness, transparency, and the like. And some of that is attributable in the estimation of some members of this body that the council needs someone at the head on a more full-time basis, and we're working collaboratively across the aisle on composition and governance issues for the Met Council, and this is a step in a positive direction to do that. So that's what is the nature of the salary change, not a raise per se. As far as Chair Dunnick's qualifications and suggestions that somehow he's not qualified because he has a political history, members, I'll just remind you that there have been a number of Met Council members appointed in the past by other governors of other parties that have political history as well, and far less qualification to serve as Met Council members. And I'm not going to name their names because in at least a couple of instances, they turned out to be great Met Council members and did actually pretty good work. One in particular who represented a part of my city who at one time had called for the elimination of the Met Council entirely and still got an appointment, arguably based on her political affiliations, did a pretty good job. And I know she's going to probably tweet out now that I said she did, but she did some good stuff. You know, I wouldn't agree with everything she did, but she did a pretty nice job, even though she was pretty much a political person when she stepped onto that particular body. Mr. Dunnick wasn't entirely a political person, comes to that seat with a lot of qualifications, comes to his current appointment having served very, very admirably as a Met Council member. And in fact, if you read the press release that the governor issued when he made the appointment of Mr. Dunnick to the chair, he talks about how effective and what important leadership role he's played on a number of fronts as a member of the Met Council, what he brought to that seat in the first place. And we're going to have much, much more opportunity, so I don't want to dwell on the subject, but the assertions made by another member, Senator Newman, just simply cannot go unresponded to at this moment in time. Of course, Chair Torres-Rey is going to be having a hearing on his confirmation in a couple of weeks, where we can have that more appropriate conversation at that time in committee and then again on the floor when we're debating confirmation. Thank you.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I would ask the President to remind members that Senate Rule 36.2 declares that the member shall speak only to the question under debate. I think we're getting pretty far afield when we're discussing individual appointees when there is absolutely nothing in this bill that deals with the names or personalities of individual appointees.
So noted. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President and members. So I rise in opposition to this bill. I think it is interesting that as we look at the language of this bill, we've heard discussions and certainly recognize that in the last session, authority was given to the governor. Not at my support, but it was still given to the governor. And now when he exercised that, we're saying, oh my, that's not right, not good, and on a very significant way disagreeing with that. But here we are today with this bill in front of us, as if somehow we're going to take something away, recognizing that what you give to the governor in one day is all the governor needs. All he needs is one day. Whether slow or fast, big or small, you give it back to the governor, and that's all he needs is one day. And that neutralizes the whole, well, the next day it's going to go back to the legislature. Well, that is of little comfort to our Minnesotans, when they realize that just in that one day, all the things that they're rising up against and all the things that may have been said, we're going to take it back from the governor, you give it to him for one day. And for that one day, you have neutralized anything else that you have been talking about. So, members, I oppose this bill, and I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Cohen yield for one more question?
Senator Cohen, will you yield? He will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Cohen, maybe I wasn't real clear, and I think the body needs to know this, that when we give the governor in this bill the authority for one day to, and no doubt in my mind that one day that these raises are going to be put in statute for the commissioners that he's already said he was going to do. Is there anything stopping the governor from saying, instead of a 27% increase overall, could the governor say, I'm going to go with a 54% increase average? Do we give him that authority as well for that one day?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no, there's a cap to what the governor can do. So he can't raise somebody unilaterally to, you know, $300,000 a year. There is a cap. And I think his proposed increases from earlier were a little bit lower than what that cap could be, but there is a cap.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So thank you, Madam President. Senator Cohen, I think you've answered my question. He can actually go higher up to the cap, up to the top, which obviously wouldn't be a doubling of the existing 27%, but he could go lower. You made that point earlier, and I think it's pretty clear in everybody's mind. You know, it's a guess at this point, but when the governor said he was going to do that, he's been generally true to his word, and I don't doubt that he will do that. Just one other comment here, and there's been an awful lot of talk on the floor about what goes on down here in St. Paul, and I think the word cronyism was brought up, and what was clear to me was, and Senator Peterson, I can't speak for him, but sent a document around here talking about some polling, and I'm sure you all know about that. And what was really clear about that interview on, I think it was KSTP, was that they interviewed two or three people, usually at a gas station, buying gas, wherever they can find somebody that people are busy going to and from. And it was quite clear to me that those folks were very, very upset about the amount of increases that were going to be given to the commissioners. Folks, those are the folks we're going to go home to this weekend. These are the people that we're going to have to go out and justify this kind of an increase. They're the ones that have been struggling through this economy. So we're going to have to go home and do that. And it's just amazing to me. And one more point I'd like to make that I made in the conference committee last night was I brought, even in my young age, I can bring back a little bit of history as Senator Cohen. But county boards have run into this, at least in my experience. And I can tell you that the county board in Douglas County back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I don't know exactly the time frame, actually caught themselves in a similar situation where they had to, and they have the authority to give themselves a raise. And this is not uncommon, I think, with county boards, and Senator Cohen, you've pointed that out. But I think what needs to be pointed out before you put either a red or a green button down today is the fact that still remains, at least in that case, and that's where I come from, those five county commissioners gave themselves a 48% increase on a 5-0 vote. And each and every one of them lost their jobs. The public responded by each and every one of them getting voted out of office. The general public does not like that kind of stuff. Only one commissioner was reelected after that. I pointed that out in the committee last night. I don't think that's anything rare. But I'll make one final comment here, and I'm going to sit down with regards to the Senator Newman's excellent way of pointing out what's going on. And you know, I brought this up last night, the Washington, D.C. feeling of cronyism politics that's coming and creeping into St. Paul here with this 148% increase, giving it to somebody who's done favors, obviously, and worked for the governor. The folks don't like that, and it should be a wonder why we have such a low approval rating in the state of Minnesota, why legislators have such a low approval rating. Folks, it should not surprise you why Governor Dayton's approval rating has dropped 10% just recently. There should be no wonder why. When this is brought out into the media, I expect that it probably is not going to go up. It's going to go down as well. And the folks are telling us something. So pay attention to that. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam President. Just briefly, I want to be perfectly clear about why this conference committee report is problematic. even though it does include revoking that unilateral authority that this body, although I didn't vote for it, although a number in this body voted to give the governor. The problem is the political games that are being played in this conference committee report. It does not remove that authority. It leaves a hole where the governor can continue to exercise that authority of granting these pay raises that the public is so vehemently against. And so am I. So the fact that we are presented with a conference committee report that has a big hole in it, that allows the governor to enact those exorbitant pay raises, is the problem. Many of us in this body, including myself, voted to remove that authority. One, we voted against giving it to him. It passed anyway. And then we voted to revoke that authority in its entirety. But that amendment failed too. So it's the hole in this bill that gives the governor that authority that the public so disagrees with. That's the problem with the conference committee report we have before us.
Senator Nenow.
Well, Madam President, when this first was proposed, before it came law, when it was a bill before this Senate, I didn't support it. And I don't remember specifically at the time if I spoke to it or not. I sure hope I did. But I've made it a pattern of mine to highlight whenever this body and this legislature wants to cede its authority and give it away to the executive branch, because we've done it time and time and time again in recent years, and it's dangerous and it's problematic and it's not what the public wants. And you end up with things like what we see right here. And now we're back trying to pull our authority back after we've given the authority away. And the governor has done something that we now say, oh my gosh, we shouldn't have allowed that to happen. And there's no good clean fix. And the solution that we have in front of us, Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Cohen touched on this, and those that might be watching online or on TV or in the gallery out in the hallway might have missed this. But there is a statutory cap on the salaries, and the governor did not, when he proposed the salary increases a little while back, did not go to the statutory cap. But now the governor has to act again. He will act again. Everyone in this room, everyone in the legislature, I think everybody watching this debate, knows that the governor is going to raise those salaries again on July 1st. And there's kind of a political axiom that's out there that says, if you're going to take the heat, you might as well go big. And so what we are doing by giving the governor a one-day window to exercise his authority before it goes away, we are actually incentivizing the governor to max it all out. And I think that's exactly what the governor is going to do. If you follow the logic, if you follow what he said about commissioners not getting paid enough, and if you see the kind of political heat that's come from the public and the polling that was handed out by Senator Peterson, 70% of the public is unhappy, is upset that this is happening. Those pay raises aren't going to happen again anytime soon, and the governor's going to take the heat no matter what. So I tell you, he's going to max it out. And what does that mean? When the governor raises salaries the first time, it was about a little under $1 million. What's left to max out? Another $500,000. So what we are doing is essentially incentivizing the governor to go from an $800,000, $1 million pay raise to $1.5 million pay raise. And we're giving him one day to do it. And I don't for a second think that he won't.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Fischbach.
Madam President, and I don't know if I'm really asking Senator Cohen to yield. I guess I'll kind of leave it up to him if he chooses to answer any of the comments that I make. But I'm really just, Senator Cohen talked a bit about the deficiency bill and how important it was and how necessary it was as it left a finance committee, that we had these important places that we need to fund. And so I have to wonder, why then did we, and using Senator Cohen's legislative term from the last debate we had, to muck it up and to add this? especially when we have the opportunity to have hearings. We could have had public hearings on this, and I believe that both Senator Bach and Senator Cohen indicated that we would have hearings the last time we discussed this issue on the floor. So I would be wondering if we were still planning on having hearings, because we do have the opportunity still to change legislation. But we haven't had the public input that we should on this. How does the public feel about the one-day window we've provided now for the governor, and how they feel about the where commissioner increases are coming from? I guess I'd really like to have seen that. And I know that there is legislation that's introduced that we haven't had a hearing on, but we could. So I really do. I think that we should take caution when we have a deficiency bill, as Senator Cohen had mentioned, that was very important that we pass, and then we add things that we have never, ever done before, by his own words, that we've never added things like this to a deficiency bill. So, and I just think, in summary, I want to remind people that the real guts of this bill is we are not stopping these increases. These increases will still go into effect. We have provided the governor with a 24-hour window, as strange as it seems, and maybe this is, I've never seen this kind of a legislation where we have twisted it and turned it so that we provide a 24-hour window of opportunity for the governor to increase salary. So I just want to remind people that is what we are looking at here. So no matter what is or isn't here, the fact that what is here is those salary increases.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm wondering if Senator Cohen would answer the question that Senator Fischbach
Senator
has
Cohen.
Raised.
Senator Cohen, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Cohen and Senator Fischbach asked. I don't think she insisted on an answer, but if you're willing to do so, the last time we talked about this, you indicated we would have hearings on the specifics of the pay raise and the amounts and so forth. Are you still intending to do that, or does this bill preclude that?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Hand, no, the bill doesn't preclude anything of the sort. And in fact, I would expect, as the finance divisions begin their work relative to the different agencies, there'll be a lot of opportunity for discussion as each of the individual agencies is examined in terms of not just the commissioners, but the deputies, the assistants, and other folks in administrative capacities.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Cohen. As we're kind of wrapping up this debate, it seems a little bit remarkable to me that this started out as a deficiency bill, and yet we've had very little talk about the actual deficiency bill itself, which to me makes it clear that that's maybe not the most important issue that's on the table today. It seems pretty much that the issue is whether or not the governor, in his judgment that was granted to him legally by the DFL majorities in the last session, whether or not in his judgment he used those powers wisely. And I believe the issue that we're talking about is, it seems like most people think that wasn't a good thing, and they're interested in finding a way to change that. And that's what this deficiency bill has become, a debate about how we can change that. I do think the House, in their bill that came out of their chamber, they did do some good things. They did restore to the legislature the power to oversee salaries, and that is a good thing, and we're glad about that. I don't know that that authority will do anything with respect to this governor for the rest of his term, especially as he's given the opportunity to exercise the authority granted to him last year to raise these salaries as he wishes. At least he has one day to do that. And so, members, whether you vote yes or no on this, I do think that that is going to be the takeaway from this debate, is whether or not the people of this state believe that the kind of actions the governor took with the DFL's permission was a good thing or not. And we'll see how the vote goes. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Then the Secretary will give Senate File 174 its third reading.
Senate File Number 174, a bill for an act relating to financing and operation of state government, providing deficiency funding.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 29 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. We move now to announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. First, I just want to thank those who did make it to Duluth and St. Louis County Days last night. Appreciate that. And secondly, members, there will be a meeting of the Purple Caucus next week, Thursday, 7:30 to 8:30. Watch your desks on Monday for the location. Thank you.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, the Senate Judiciary Committee will convene immediately following adjournment. We have a full agenda. Please be prompt, members. Thank you.
Without objection, Madam, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senators Ress, Johnson, Rode. Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senate Environment and Energy Committee will meet immediately after as well. We will only meet for a half hour trying to take up one of the bills. Thank you.
Are there any more announcements?
You got the bill, right?
Senator Bach.
Yeah, I did. I returned that. Thank you.
Madam President, I move the Senate do not adjourn until Monday, March 2nd, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.